Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 6, Text Number 10. Smadam Vishva Srijam Isho Vignapitam Doksajaha Vidajam Tapat Sveina Tejas Aisham Vrittaye Smaram Vishva Srijam Isho Vignapitam Adoksajaha Virajam Matafat Sreina Veja Saisham Vivatay Smaram Vishva Srijam Isho Vignapitam Adoksajaha Virajam Matafat Sreina Eja Shaisham Rivitaye Smaram Dishvasri Jamisho Vigna Pitam Matok Sajaha Virajam Tapat Svena Eja Shaisham Rivitaye So more. Remembering. Visvasijam of the demigods entrusted with the task of cosmic construction. Ishaha, the Supreme Lord. Vigna Pitam, as he was prayed for. Adhok Sajaha, the transcendence. Virajam, the gigantic universal form. Atapat, considered thus. Sveina, by his own. Tejasa, energy. Esham, for them. Vrittaye, for understanding. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord is the Supersoul of all the demigods entrusted with the task of constructing the cosmic manifestation. Being thus prayed to by the demigods, He thought to Himself and thus manifested the gigantic form for their understanding. Purport. The impersonalists are captivated by the gigantic universal form of the Supreme. They think that the control behind this gigantic manifestation is imagination. Intelligent persons, however, can estimate the value of the cause by observing the wonders of the effects. For example, the individual human body does not develop from the womb of the mother independently, but because the living entity, the soul, is within the body. Without the living entity, a material body cannot automatically take shape or develop. When any material object displays development, it must be understood that there is a spiritual soul within it. And within the manifestation. The gigantic universe has developed gradually, just as the body of a child develops. The conception that the transcendence enters within the universe is therefore logical. As the materialist cannot find the soul and the supersoul within the heart, similarly, for want of sufficient knowledge, they cannot see the Supreme Soul is the cause of the universe. The Lord is therefore described in the Vedic literature as avan-manasa-gocharaha, beyond the conception of words and minds. Due to poor fund of knowledge, the mental speculators try to bring the Supreme within the purview of words and minds. but the Lord refuses to be so intelligible. The speculator has no adequate words or mind to gauge the infinity of the Lord. The Lord is called Adhok Saja, or the person who is beyond perception by the blunt, limited potency of our senses. One cannot perceive the transcendental name or form of the Lord by mental speculation. The mundane PhDs are completely unable to speculate on the Supreme with their limited senses. Such attempts by the puffed-up PhDs are compared to the philosophy of the frog in the well. A frog in a well was informed of the gigantic Pacific Ocean, and he began to puff himself up in order to understand or measure the length and breadth of the Pacific Ocean. Ultimately, the frog burst and died. The title PhD can also be interpreted as plow department, a title meant for the tillers in the paddy field. The attempt of the tillers in the paddy field to understand the cosmic manifestation and the cause behind such wonderful work can be compared to the endeavor of the frog in the well to calculate the measurement of the Pacific Ocean. The Lord can reveal himself only to a person who is submissive and who engages in his transcendental loving service. The demigods controlling the elements and ingredients of universal affairs pray to the Lord for guidance, and thus he manifested his gigantic form as he did at the request of Arjuna. Om Abhyanatumarandasa Jananjana Savakaya Chaksuru Militam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitana Manovistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Svaiham Rupakadamayam Dadati Tsvapandantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Saman Iti Namine Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesa Sundavadi Paschata Deshatarane Vancha Kalpataru Vaischa Kripa Shindu Vihe Pacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. The subject of creation occupies a good portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. According to Srila Sukadeva Goswami, there are 10 subjects which the Bhagavatam covers, and two of these are creation. One is the natural creation, that is to say, the creation of the Supreme Lord up until the time of Lord Brahma's appearance. And the second is the creation made by Brahma. The present subject deals with the creation before the time of Brahma's appearance. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained that this subject of creation is necessary for us in order to convince us about the supremacy of the Lord. He says that because we have no attraction yet to the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord, we have to first of all become convinced that Krishna is the Supreme. I recall when I first would go personally to meet Srila Prabhupada, on a number of occasions he said to me, just try to become convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada gave us a pranam mantra which we could chant in his honor, and it explains that his mission is to cast aside impersonalism and voidism. To become convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead means to defeat impersonalism and voidism within ourselves, and ultimately to preach it to others, so that the world can again take up the path of Dharma. because so long as impersonalism and voidism reign, there cannot be true Dharma. What can be a greater disservice to the Lord than to try to disprove his personality, as the impersonalists do? What can be a greater offense to the Lord than to say that ultimately everything is void? The demons who tried to kill the Lord by dismembering him, his different parts, are given the same ultimate destination, Sayujya Mukti, as the impersonalists. Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, therefore, that to consider the impersonalists' destination as glorious is a symptom of one's ignorance, because it is the same destination that the demons go to. Again, here we find the universal form is explained, and it is said that it is a particularly attractive form to the impersonalists. It is also an attractive form to those who are worshippers of nature. Just like in Japan, there is a religion, a Shinto religion, and there are other religions elsewhere, which focus on nature. So the universal form is said to be the first step in God realization. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, we are taught, or rather those who are very much attached to appreciating nature are taught to see the Supreme in all the wonderful parts of the creation. Certain aspects of nature are said to be like the lotus feet of the Lord. Others are said to be like the knees and the shanks of the Lord. Others his waist, gradually his chest, and finally his face, his eyes, etc. Just like we know also from Gita, the sun and the moon are considered to be like the two eyes of the Lord. The trees are said to be like the hairs on the body of the Lord. The mountains are said to be like the stacks of bones of the Lord. The oceans and seas are like his waist. And it goes on. Again, the different parts of the body are compared to the different ashramas and varnas. The head is like the Brahmins. The chest and arms, the Kshatriyas. The waist, the Vaishyas. And the legs and feet, the sutras. Everything within creation can be placed upon the universal form of the Lord. So this helps one to envision how everything is interconnected, because in fact, everything is interconnected. At the time of the Greek philosophers, when the theory of atoms was first postulated in Western philosophy, the Greek philosophers considered that the atoms moved randomly, and there was no rhyme or reason to how they ultimately formed, which is in some ways similar to modern materialism also. But we know that there is a very clear divine plan behind the movement of atoms, because Krishna says, Andantarashta Paramanu Chayantarastam, that I am present even within the atom. So nothing moves, not even an atom, what to speak of a blade of grass, without the will of the Supreme Lord. Krishna is controlling everything. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasabhrita. Krishna alone is the Supreme Controller. And this is actually the most essential teaching of the Bhagavatam. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, to prove how Krishna is the cause of all causes, Sarva Karana Karanam. All of the verses of the Bhagavatam substantiate this statement from the third chapter, text 28 of the first canto, that Etesham sakalaha kungsa krishnastu bhagavan svayam. So similarly, this verse today also substantiates it, because we know that the universal form is a philosophical form or a temporary form. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada said it is not so important. It is not so important as the eternal form of Krishna, the Satchidananda Vigraha form of Srinandanandana, Yasodanandana, Krishna. But it is important. It is very important. In fact, were it not for this form, we would not be here today. The universal form is certainly very, very important because it is a form meant for teaching. Teaching whom? Teaching the demigods. These demigods are not the demigods of this particular universe. And it was this puzzle which got me to first take interest in studying more deeply the process of creation. Because when you follow the sequence of the creative process, you find that the universe is not yet created here. And yet the demigods are praying. So the question naturally arises, you know, which demigods or who are these demigods who are praying to the Lord? So the explanation is given that these are the demigods who are in charge of the universal elements, the earth, the water, the fire, the air, etc. These are the demigods who reside in the universal coverings. These are primal demigods. They are like prototypes of the demigods who will later on be manifest from Brahma after the universal creation. And it is actually, they are actually Shaktis of the Lord. They are not individuals like the individual Jivas as the demigods who are in these universe, in each individual universe. But they are specially empowered Shaktis of the Lord. Shaktis sometimes are compared to be like wives of the Lord. And in this case, we find that they could not cooperate together at the time of universal creation. It is explained that at first, the Lord is known as Mahavishnu. But before Mahavishnu, we know that Mahavishnu, the first Purusha, is an expansion of Mahashankarshan. And this Mahashankarshan is originally coming from Baladev. Recently we were hearing the glories of Lord Baladev and how powerful he is. He is the source of all the expansions of the Lord, including the Purusha avatars. And the source of Baladev is Krishna. Krishna, Balaram. So Srila Prabhupada established Sri Krishna Balaram in our Vrindavan temple, and side by side Sri Sri Gornitai. So we are worshipping Sri Sri Gornitai here. Srila Prabhupada was so much pleased to see the merciful forms of Sri Sri Gornitai when he visited Atlanta temple. If some of you may have been there, I had the good fortune to see Srila Prabhupada there. And His Divine Grace was chanting Parama Karuna, the wonderful song glorifying the mercy of Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada was sitting opposite to the deities, much as he is sitting opposite them, except that, yeah, I guess maybe, I think they were on that side and Prabhupada was on this side. Anyway, I guess it depends on which side you're looking at. I'm sitting over here now, so I'm saying that, but actually if I was over there, I would say it was just the same. It was the same. Prabhupada was sitting opposite them, and he began to sing this song, and he could not go very far, because His Divine Grace became overwhelmed with the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, overwhelmed by the compassion of Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, knowing how fallen we are, and how Prabhupada has begun to lift us up, he realized and was appreciating that this is only possible by the mercy of Sri Nityananda Prabhu and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna and Balaram are not approachable by ordinary sinful rascals like myself. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is known as Patita Pavan. He is the lifter of the most fallen. And to make sure he does so, Sri Nityananda Prabhu is there. Just in case Lord Chaitanya forgets his mission, as he did when Madai became very offensive, Nityananda Prabhu is always there to remind the Lord, remember, this is your mission of mercy. This is when you come to, in the Kali Yuga, to deliver the most fallen persons. So it is very purposeful on the part of Srila Prabhupada that he has established Sri Sri Gauri Thai everywhere. We see that in Mayapur, Navadweep, Dam, their establishment of Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahiyanya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Radha Krishna is in so many temples of Mayapur, and even Prabhupada established in Calcutta and Mayapur like this. But all over the world, Prabhupada added Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Because Nityananda Prabhu is the original spiritual master, and he is actually the deliverer of the fallen, most fallen. He is the one who forgave Madai. He takes all kinds of difficulty. He is the original preacher. He is the personality who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent along with Haridas Thakur to go from door to door. And this is the mission that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the world. This is the mission which Mahaprabhu has ordered every single one of his followers to take up, to go town to town, village to village, door to door, and request people to please accept the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to please take the holy name as the means of deliverance in this age. So Srila Prabhupada is the most confidential servitor following this order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. He is the manifest mercy and representative of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. This is how we are meant to see the spiritual master. He is not an ordinary conditioned soul. Nityananda Prabhu, Nityananda Ram, Balaram, is the possessor of all strength. Prabhupada explains what that strength is. It is the strength to take up the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the strength. Just as Balaram and Krishna are together, and Balaram represents all the strength, Bala. This Nityananda Prabhu represents the strength to be able to execute the Sankirtan movement very nicely. So we are always praying for the mercy of Nityananda Ram. This Nityananda Ram is so merciful that he makes arrangements for the conditioned souls to come back home, back to Godhead. And how does he do so? He expands himself as Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu is such a gigantic personality that from his skin holes, unlimited numbers of golden seeds emanate. And each one of these small seeds becomes a universe. He releases these seeds into the accommodating chamber of Maya Shakti. Maya Shakti has two aspects. One is her aspect of accommodation. Another is her aspect of providing all of the materials for universal creation. Just like a woman has two aspects by which she delivers or prepares or gives birth to a child. One is her womb, which is the accommodating chamber. And the second are all the nutrients within her body which gradually form the body of the child. So the supreme female potency, Maya Devi, has similarly two aspects, Maya and Pradhan. Pradhan supplies all of the universal elements. And the accommodating chamber of Maya is that place in which the seeds of the universe are released. And when Mahavishnu glances at Maya, he impregnates Maya with the help of his halo, who is known as Shambhu. So Shambhu is described in Brahma Samhita that he is God and yet he is not God. He is simultaneously God and yet there is a distinction. The distinction is that he touches Maya, whereas Lord Vishnu or Narayan or Krishna or what to speak of all of the avatars, they never have contact with Maya. But Shambhu has contact. So he is that aspect of Krishna, or Mahavishnu, let us say, who touches Maya. And Mahavishnu glances, and that glance is Shambhu. And Shambhu carries two things within himself when he contacts Maya. The living entities, all of the jivas, who are bound for entrance into the universal spheres in order to enact their karma. And the second aspect that he carries is the element of time, Kala Shakti. Shakti is an energy of the Lord. So when the jivas come, they have all of their combined karma from their past, from the past creation within them. That means they have so many desires, but these desires are dormant. Because of the presence of time, there is a possibility that these desires will again manifest. Just like when a child is born, we think, oh, how cute, how innocent, how pure. But we know very well that when that little child grows, you know, he or she becomes a little rascal. Because all of the desires which were lying dormant there start to manifest. And this happens by the progress of time. So when time and the jivas with their karma begin to agitate the accommodating chamber of Maya, which is made up of the three modes of material nature, then gradually the elements start to manifest. And when they manifest, it is called the Mahat, Mahatattva. Before that, it is called Pradhan. Pradhan means when all the elements are there within Maya, but they cannot be distinguished. Just like in a chemistry lab, there's a solution, and when they put the catalytic agent in, the solution precipitates, and suddenly you see everything. So similarly, the catalytic agent here is the glance of Mahavishnu, which is the living entities and time. When these start to mix with the material nature, Pradhan manifests its elements as Mahatattva, and then the creation starts to take place. Earth, all of the different elements are there, and they start to form themselves gradually around the golden seeds. But they have difficulty in cooperating, just like we see sometimes in our own society, we cannot always cooperate together. And therefore we have to approach Srila Prabhupada, just like I remember sometimes we would have difficulty cooperating. I always give the example how Madhavisa was a treasurer and I was a temple commander in the first big temple in Los Angeles. And it was very difficult for us to cooperate because every, weekend, Madhavisa would disappear. And we needed money for the Sunday feast and all the other things that were going to be done on the weekend, but we couldn't find the treasurer. And by the end of the, as long as the Sankirtan brought in the money, he was there. He'd take the money and immediately close the treasury, and then on the weekends he would disappear. So finally I got so frustrated, I went to Srila Prabhupada. I said, Prabhupada, I cannot understand what we're going to do because the treasury is not cooperating. Prabhupada said, what is the criticism? I said, the criticism is that whenever we need money, he's not available. Prabhupada said, very good. He is the first class treasurer. He said, this is the first qualification of the treasurer. He does not like to spend money. So then, Madhavisa went to Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, I have a complaint about the temple commander. Kamal Krishna goes on. He said, what is this? And then he gave his complaint. Then Prabhupada said, the best thing is that when there is a difficulty like this between devotees, you must find a common activity that you can all agree to engage in. And then Prabhupada said, that common activity is Sankirtan. So Madhavisa and I would go on Sankirtan together. Vishnujan would stand there doing the kirtan. Madhavisa, myself, Rabbadinandan, we would stand there and distribute the books, which in those days we only had back to Godhead. We'd have to distribute the Back to Godhead magazines. And by doing this and doing care time together, all differences were vanquished. So it's a good lesson to know about, isn't it? Because we should understand that as long as we're each doing individual activities, we may not appreciate what the other's doing. And we're all in different parts of the world. We may not even know what the others are doing. But if we come together, and if at the time of coming together we do care time, this care time is very close to our real identities. Because eternally we are meant to be part of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan party. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu are not just the manifestations of Krishna and Balaram for delivering the conditioned souls in this world. They have their eternal Sankirtan going on right in the center of Goloka Vrindavan, in Navadvip Dham. And the members of ISKCON are men, Prabhupada said, you know, there will be an ISKCON of the spiritual world, which means that we will return one day to be with Sri Sri Gaur-Nitai and take part in the Sankirtan. So we may not be so pure as Srinivasacharya and Narottam Thakur and have the presence of Mother Janava and do, you know, as they did the Kirtan, the Panchatattva manifested at the first time they installed the deities and began the celebration of God. We may not see, in other words, the Panchatattva, but Prabhupada said that you should know when the Sankirtan is done very nicely, the Panchatattva are indeed present. And I personally know, Prabhupada said one day when we did a program and I didn't see, you know, we had only 5 people attend the program. And we apologized to Prabhupada about that. And Prabhupada said, no, didn't you see? There, all the Panchatattva was there. Narada Muni was there. Lord Shiva was there. They were all dancing in ecstasy. You know, and what did we see but the empty room? We saw so many empty chairs. We did not see the Panchatattva, but Prabhupada saw. So this relationship that we have when we chant together is a very wonderful, pure relationship, you see. And it's beyond the mental platform. It's beyond intellectual, egotistic platform. It's the spiritual platform. And therefore, kirtan is so important. Anyway, getting back to our explanation of the creation, the elements could not cooperate. Therefore, I was giving example of the treasure and the temple commander. They could not cooperate. They went to the superior authority. Now, what do the universal demigods do? When they can't cooperate, who do they go to? They have to go to their supreme authority, and that is the Lord himself. So they all pray to the Lord at the end of the 5th chapter of this 3rd canto, please help us, we're not sure what we should do. Then it is explained that the Lord immediately came and he entered into the universe. How did he enter into the universe? The universe was like an empty shell. And he entered in as Govardhakshayi Vishnu, the super soul of the universe. And he brought with him the jivas who were cast through Mahavishnu. Each Garbhadakshayi Vishnu brings respective jivas into the particular universe. And when he got in there, just like in this room, when there wasn't enough air, we all started to perspire, so he started to perspire. And that perspiration filled up half the universe, and after getting, you know, when you perspire a lot, you get tired, so when he got tired, he laid down. And, you know, laying down, he laid down, and he was just like everybody says, come and float down the, what's that river here? Swanee River. Is it? The Swanee River? That's not the name of the river here. Ichitaki. Yeah, what is it? Ichitaki, the river of desire. So all your desires will be fulfilled on that river if you float down that river. So when Garbhadakshayi Vishnu lay down, immediately he got his inner tube, Anantashesh. Because Lord Balaram is always doing seva, always doing service to Krishna. So whenever Krishna comes in one of his manifested forms, Lord Balaram also is present. So this Balaram is there as Anantashesh, and Garbhadakshayi Vishnu has him as his, you know, place to repose upon. And within the lying down mood, he was in yoga nidra. Huh? This yoga nidra is not like our nidra, our sleep. When we sleep, we have nightmares. When the Lord sleeps, you know, he has wonderful activities with his internal energy. The internal energy is described as Roma Devi. Roma Devi is the are potency of the Lord, and she is the internal energy, not external energy. The Lord also has his external energy, known as Maya or Durga. So while the Lord is dreaming and within enjoying pastimes with his internal potency, his external potency, Maya, is functioning. And it is explained that she takes care of the business of creation on behalf of the Lord while he enjoys internally with his pleasure potency. So while he was lying for a long, long time, the living entities were all within him. And they were like, you know, just like when we get hungry. Like if I don't finish this lecture soon, everybody will start to go, you know, bang on the table saying, you know, we want prasad. We want prasad. So all the jivas, you know, they were hungry because it has been a long time since they were manifest. After all, the creation had long been gone, the previous creation. They had been sleeping for, you know, only God knows how long. God and our dear God brother Jhudakarma, who has written a nice article in BTG, time, right? He gave explanation of time, of how much time had elapsed, you know, during the time of dissolution. So the living entities were all, you know, sitting there, you know, we want prasad, we want prasad. They were all in the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, it's explained, he was looking inside and he decided that, you know, I'm ready for, you know, like a woman knows when the birth pains take place. All the living entities inside the mother's womb, the baby starts to kick. So all the living entities were getting, you know, starting to kick. So the first thing that Garbhadakshaya Vishnu did is he manifested a very amazing form known as the Virat Rup, the universal form. And this universal form covered and included the entire universe and all of its parts. And it's explained here that he did this he manifested the gigantic form for their understanding, for the understanding of the demigods. And which demigods in particular? Brahmaji. Especially Brahma. Because Brahma has to create or engineer or place everyone in their place. Now, he's the big controller. And we should all know that now because we're all coming here. You know, all the Ishvaras of ISKCON have gathered together for their yearly annual meeting in North America. And, you know, I will just relate to you briefly what Prabhupada told me about being an Ishvara. He called me to his room and he showed me the cover of Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1, you know, that spiritual world picture. And he said, you know, that the Lord is very great, and he described Krishna, where Krishna is and where Mahavishnu is, and on. Then he said there's a cloud, and in that cloud there are, you know, millions of universes. Each universe cannot even be measured by the material scientists. There's so many planets, of which Earth is one planet, not a very large one either. And on Earth there are so many continents, and in one of those continents, North America, there are so many cities, and in one of those cities, Los Angeles, there are so many sections, and in Los Angeles, one section, there is one street, La Cienega Boulevard, and on La Cienega Boulevard, there's one temple, and in that one temple, there is one controller who thinks that he's controlling everything. And, you know, you can imagine how that one controller felt. Very small. So, you know, we must always remember how insignificant we are and how great Krishna is and how, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu are actually the doers. You know, the doing is done by Guru and Gauranga. And we are just sort of riding on their coattails. As long as we don't get in the way, they'll do everything. Prabhupada said, it's already a guaranteed fact that the Sankirtan movement is going to take over the world. The only question is, who's going to get the credit? So credit is very easy, and it seems very easy. You just don't do the wrong thing. But not doing the wrong thing is not very easy. You know, so if we can just do the right thing by cooperating and not interfering with Sri Guru and Gauranga, with Prabhupada's plans, then it becomes very easy. So this meeting that we're having is simply to try to understand Prabhupada's desire. It's not that we're trying to figure out a new plan. The blueprint is made. Prabhupada said, not only did he make the blueprint, he built the structure. He said, all you have to do is, you know, practically paint the walls. So it's not like we have to create a new structure. The structure is there. We simply have to finally appreciate and understand it and maintain it, you know, build it, maintain it very, very nicely. Take good care of it. Prabhupada said, even if you don't do anything further, even if you don't increase, he said this in the last days, even if you don't increase, just maintain what I have given you. Just try to maintain, but in order to maintain, you have to appreciate. So we heard that instruction yesterday from our Dr. Peter. He was saying, appreciation is so important. Appreciation of each other's qualities, appreciation of, to begin with, of what Prabhupada has given us, especially of his teachings. To know his teachings, to study them, to worship them. Appreciation of all of the instructions which Prabhupada gave us. So many specific instructions on how to do practically everything. I mean, Prabhupada even taught us, you know, the most rudimentary things, how to clean a floor. So many instructions he gave. He would get down on his hands and knees and personally show me how to clean the floor in his Bombay quarters. Another time when we first arrived in India, you know, we were packing, and Prabhupada showed me how to pack a bundle. You know, and it was amazing. He put out a big blanket, put a bunch of things, because we're going on the train. In those days, we traveled by train. Put out a big blanket, put everything in the blanket, then he folded the blanket, under the blanket, he first had a rope, after everything was folded, took the rope, Prabhupada jumped on top of the bundle, put his foot down, tightened the rope, pulled it tight, you know, and tightened the knot, and then, you know, he patted it, and he said, this is how you travel, this is how you tie a bundle, you know. So, I mean, from cleaning the floor to tying bundles, you know, to proving that, you know, PhD means plow department, there wasn't anything that Prabhupada didn't instruct him. I mean, it's actually a phenomenal thing. I mean, you can make many, many lifetimes of study of Prabhupada's, you know, books, which is now becoming available in the folio program, and it's just phenomenal. Just like our Chaitanya Das was saying, how much Prabhupada spoke about Jesus, you know, who's not specifically in our Sampradaya, yet how much he spoke about Jesus. And it's practically any topic you want, you can get it from Prabhupada. So this is appreciation. And this is the meaning of being a follower of Prabhupada, to actually be in sync with Prabhupada's view of the world, of, you know, of philosophy, on how to do everything, how to spread Krishna consciousness. So, when the Lord manifested the universal form, the person who was really attentive was Brahma. One of the acharyas, Viraragavacharya, I believe his name is pronounced, he explains that Brahma was conscious within the body of Garbhadakshai Vishnu. And Brahma was called up by Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and he actually accepts that the universal form, he is allowed by Garbhadakshai Vishnu to temporarily take the subtle body of the universal form and identify with it as if it's his own form. Just like if you take me on a tour of this farm, you'll bring me in a car and you'll take me to every part of the farm and I begin to feel all of the different, know where everything is. Vishnu allowed Brahma to accept that subtle body of the universal form practically like his own, temporarily, so that he would understand everything about the universe. And Vishnu taught Brahma by this, before Brahma's birth, how everything would be created. But what happens at the time of birth? You forget. Therefore, when Brahma came out of the lotus, he forgot. And what did he therefore have to do? First he tried to figure out, where am I? Who am I? Where am I coming from? Just like every intelligent person is supposed to answer these questions. Who am I? Where am I coming from? And what's my business here? So Brahma is the most intelligent, and he showed us how to ask these questions. You know, who am I? So the first thing, who am I, means where am I coming from? So he dove down into the lotus. But you can't do that. You can't figure out where you're coming from by any material method. If Brahma couldn't do it, and he had the capacity to dive into the universal lotus, what to speak of, you know, someone looking through a microscope or a telescope, which is such an indirect process compared to what Brahma could do. Then Brahma spun his heads around. He got three more heads. Still it wasn't enough, because everything was dark. Finally, he, you know, just got to help. I mean, when the Lord saw Brahma got tired, he just sat down, he just took a moment's break, and immediately the Lord gave him the instruction, tapa, do austerity. So he began to perform very heavy austerities. His heavy austerities are not like ours. Our heavy austerity is to preach Krishna consciousness. Clearly, that is the austerity. Prabhupada did not give any other type of austerity much importance. You know, like coming up now is Nirjala Ekadasi, and I was thinking, oh God, am I going to do this Nirjala Ekadasi? Well, I try to do it usually, but personally, I don't like to fast that much. Everybody knows I like to eat prasadam, so I don't like to fast. So I was thinking, and I haven't broken any Ekadasi, so you know, I don't really have to do Nirjala. And I was thinking, Prabhupada didn't do, at least we didn't watch him do Nirjala Ekadasi. And Prabhupada didn't do, apparently, a lot of these types of austerities. But, you know, anybody that traveled with Prabhupada, everybody, or all of us know from reading the Lilamrita, that there was no more austere person in the entire world than Srila Prabhupada. Nobody. You know, and I don't know how many persons in our whole disciplic line have ever taken on the austerity that Prabhupada took on. That when you're, you know, at 70 years of age, you start traveling around the world, you know, 16 times, and that's all right, but considering the baggage that Prabhupada had, you know, the baggage I'm talking about is 5,000 to 10,000 disciples. And some roller bag, Prabhupada traveled with 5,000 or 10,000 disciples in the whole world as his karma, you know, at the age of 70. What austerity that Prabhupada took on his shoulders, and never flinched. We never saw Prabhupada go like this, you know. Guru Jan once said to me that Prabhupada is an impossible act to follow. It's an impossible act. You can only, he said, you only fail when you follow this act. Comparatively, you cannot, it's impossible. You know, so all we can do, the only way you don't fail is you just keep glorifying Prabhupada and tell everybody what Prabhupada did. Because if you can't walk in those footsteps, they're too big. It's impossible to do what Prabhupada did. Because Prabhupada actually established the Veda culture on every level throughout the world. You know, he preserved the Veda culture. He didn't do, what he did is no less than when Matsya saved the Vedas. You know, just as Matsya saved the Vedas from extinction, Prabhupada saved the Vedas. He saved Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, practically, because it had ground to a halt. He saved it. He gave it energy again. He pushed it. And somehow we're just going on. Prabhupada said to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj when he came to visit Prabhupada in London, that this is the Guru Parampara. I am, you know, my Guru Maharaj is pushing me, and I am pushing you, and you are pushing others now. This is the Guru Parampara. I remember those words he told him. So we're going on by the pushing of Prabhupada. And Brahma went on by the pushing of Vishnu. This is the disciplic line, right? Brahma is our first acharya. First comes Krishna. And that, you know, Krishna and Mahavishnu are no different. And Mahavishnu empowered Brahma through this universal form. So this universal form is very important for us. Not as a means of meditation, but we should appreciate that if Brahma hadn't gotten this instruction, he would not know how to create. He would not know. Now his austerity that he performed, as I was speaking about austerity, we have to do, our austerity is preaching. That's the austerity that Prabhupada gave us to do. Everything is secondary to that austerity. In other words, just like, you know, Prabhupada would give more importance, instead of fasting, to go out on Sankirtan and distribute books. And I remember we were celebrating the Sringa Chaturdasi, and we were in Portland, Oregon, the Radha-Damodar party, you know, and everybody was going to fast on that day, and we had a choice whether to fast or do book distribution. You know, so all the men said, which do you want us to do? So finally I said, we're going to do both. So you all go out on book distribution and fast. And they had the best day on the Sankirtan. It was a fantastic day. And, you know, we stayed back and we cooked a big feast for Lord Nisringadev. When the men came back, you know, big prasadam feast. So our austerity is to preach. Anybody who preaches gets the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, gets instructed as Brahma got instructed. Now, Brahma was a very high-level personality. At that time, what was the question of preaching? There wasn't anybody else in the universe. So he just meditated on the Gayatri Mantra. Let's explain in Brahma Samhita. He meditated on that mantra that we have, on Krishna, Govinda, and Gopinath. He meditated on Krishna like this, and his pastimes in Vrindavan. And he therefore became enlightened. And that enlightenment was that he understood who he was. And he understood what his business was. Because when we understand who we are, we'll know what our business is. When we understand how much Srila Prabhupada is depending upon us, we will know what our business is. When we understand what is the ticket for going back to Godhead, we will understand what our business is. This mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been the Sankirtan mission. Mahaprabhu has chosen the means for delivering the people of this age. That is the Sankirtan movement. So when we push the Sankirtan movement forward, when we understand that we are a servant in the Sankirtan party of Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this becomes our ticket for going back to Godhead. So Brahma understood from his austerity and his meditation as the universal, you know, creator, now what do I have to do? And he prayed to Krishna that if I'm going to have to do this work, then I pray to you, don't let me become overcome by the mode of passion and ignorance. Because if I do, I'll forget my work. So one time a devotee wrote to Prabhupada that by going on Sankirtan, I feel like I'm becoming contaminated. Prabhupada immediately wrote back, you know, because I'm dealing with so many. Prabhupada immediately wrote back, Sankirtan never contaminates anybody. The contamination is already in your heart. And because you're not properly fixed in Sankirtan, therefore it is coming out. But Sankirtan is the purifying process. It doesn't contaminate anyone. In fact, if we don't go out in Sankirtan, we will not get purified. This is the most difficult thing about projects like this, is that unless you're in the preaching mood and see this project as a preaching project, you will not get purified. And Prabhupada never envisioned places for retirement. Where's Prabhupada's retirement? When I was always worried, especially when I left India in 1974, I was always worried that now if Prabhupada, I read, you know, the Chaitanya Chaitamrita came out, Prabhupada said that when the spiritual minister gets elderly, he retires with some disciples. And I thought, I hope that I'm going to be one of his disciples. I want to be with Prabhupada at that time. And I was actually in anxiety thinking, you know, now I went to the West and probably he'll retire in India and I lost my chance to be with Prabhupada. Anyway, by Krishna's arrangement, Prabhupada's mercy, he gave me the chance to be with him. But the one that he didn't retire. He never retired. Prabhupada didn't retire, though he retired for about 6 hours. And then he left. You know, you can say he retired by withdrawing in the last 6 or 7 hours. Otherwise, till the final moments, you know, it was unbelievable. Prabhupada was preaching, up until the fourth day, perhaps, before he left, dictating Srimad Bhagavatam. It's inconceivable that someone would not eat or practically drink anything for 4 months, could not lift his arm, could not turn over, could not practically move a single part of his body, and yet, if you read that 13th, I think it's the 13th chapter, isn't it? Or is it the 14th? 13th chapter of the 10th canto. The purports are like super nectarian and brilliant purports. Maybe some of the most brilliant purports Prabhupada ever dictated, you know. Perfect intelligence, perfect consciousness, and no retirement. The devotees were coming one by one. Prabhupada was giving them their final push. I remember each devotee came, you know, and it was like Prabhupada was just, you know, empower them. This is your mission. No retirement. No selfish motive. No personal consideration. This is tapasya. This is our tapasya, to sacrifice ourselves for the welfare of the living entities and delivering the living entities. So these projects like this, real projects like this, are meant for this purpose. If you don't consider how to turn this project for preaching purposes, you can't get purified. Not be purified. Because this is the Kali Yuga. And in the Kali Yuga, Krishna Varnam Trisha Krishna Sango Pangashta Parshadam Yajnai Sankirtanai Prayer Yajantihi Sumedisha. Those who have sufficient intelligence perform Sankirtan. Now, Prabhupada has given quite a broad definition to Sankirtan. We can see that even farming projects can be part of the Sankirtan movement because they embody the principles of, you know, Varnashram Dharma, which Prabhupada teaches in his books. So when we go out and distribute these books, sooner or later people are going to say, where is it? Where is it? I want to see what it's all about. Then they have to come here. But if all they do is come here and all they see is food stamps, canned food, frozen food, and whatever else they see, they're going to go, you know, they're going to read the books, they're going to, you know, it's got to match. It doesn't match up, you know, people are going to go, you know, they're going to go out. They're not going to stay. So this is preaching. This is big preaching. It's difficult, you know. It's not easy to be an example out on a farm. In fact, I think it's easier to be out on the lots or in the airport than to be on a farm. You know, this is more difficult because when you're out there, that's in the mode of passion. And it's easy. So when you're in the mode of passion, you don't have to do it. It pushes you. But this is the mode of goodness, Prabhupada said. The kind of, oh, wow, this is beautiful. Just like in the house I'm staying, there's a peacock next door. And Krishna raised for me. If I'm down in Vrindavan, Lucy put me in a peacock next to a peacock. So every morning, you know, I hear that honk, honk, you know, this beautiful sound. This beautiful sound of a peacock. And I think, oh, wow, this is it. I'm in the spiritual world here. You know, nothing to do. I've already made it. I've already arrived. Nowhere to go, you know. So this is the problem with the mode of goodness. It conditions you to happiness, you know, to satisfaction. But you've got to realize there's a big battle going on here. This is not the spiritual world. These trees are, so, you know, these trees, the blades of grass, there's a big battle going on. Every one of the living entities out here is in a huge war, struggling for existence, for survival. So, you know, if you want to be kind to the trees, to the blades of grass, you've got to plow the fields, take care of cows, make a community that is based on reality, you know, not on this false artificial economy. Because this artificial economy is going to collapse one day. It's not going to be there. And you can't say, then I'll do it. Just like someone says, when I get old, then I'll chant. You know, that time isn't going to come. So if you've got land, you've got to make it fertile. Prabhupada, when he went to Mayapur, main concern was, is all the land being, you know, cultivated? First question, right? He wanted to see how the land was being cultivated. So living out in the country where you got cheap land is for the purpose of cultivation. You know, this has got to be there. Even if you're not a cultivator, somebody's got to do it, and you've got to figure out how each and every person here can somehow be a part of the strategy for spreading Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's not part of Sankirtan. It can't just be for living. Because Prabhupada says everyone's living. All the karmis are also living. We're devotees. So, this is went back and forth into some practical instructions. I think we are, you know, the living entities are now banging on the table, where's Prasanna, where's Prasanna, where's Prasanna? So, just like when Garbhadakshaya Vishnu finally looked inside, it got so heavy that the whole thing burst out. So I think I'm going to end the class, otherwise I will burst out of this room due to your wrath for holding you back. I went too long. So maybe we should end without questions because it is late. I think the meetings have to go on. So thank you very much for your patience.
Please, if the guests can,
we'll
send out some information to the speed,
Gaurav Tegra Sahib,
so if you can,
try
everybody else
to try and talk,
we can take
some time. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Bhagavatam ki. Srila Gaurav Tegra Sahib ki.